to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharp and nails.
Confidence of a hero or a fool? I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take on it. What's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed, indeed, indeed it is. It is a science thing. It is a science place. It is a scientific fact that we are all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only... Protonic Reversal. Welcome to it, everybody. Friday night special edition. It's a great reason why I'm doing a special edition, by the way, and one that's a little more, more interesting, I think, than normal. But I just really want to have this guy on. It's awesome. This record he put out is, it's not their first one. It's not even their second one. But it's one of my favorites of the year, and I'm really excited to talk to Jason Rivera of Gaytheist tonight. Great artist, great musician, and. Really pumped to get into it with them. So before we do that, a couple things. First of all, I'm going on tour. I've mentioned it plenty. So if you're in any of the places that we're playing, come on out to that. Quarry House, Washington, D.C., O'Brien's, Boston. I'm just going to go through the cities. It'll be easier. Providence, New York, Philadelphia, Youngstown, Detroit, Chicago, Minneapolis for Catterall, Sioux City, Rapid City, Casper, Missoula, Boise, Reno, Bend, Seattle, Portland, Oakland, Palmdale, San Diego, Los Angeles, Way of the Neutron Tour, neutronfriends.bandcamp.com. Come see us out there if you're in any of those places. If you know people in those places, tell them we are coming. It would be great to see you. And of course, who am I? I am Conan Neutron, your host. Welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I am a rock and roll lifer that has been touring and recording for 25 years. Most known for the band Conan Neutron, The Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 425. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding at protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will support the show and gladly achieve that goal. If you like the show or even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords. It's just a darn nice thing to do, really. Okay, so episode 425. This is an interesting fellow from an interesting band. This is Jason from Gaytheist, and again, like I said, it's one of my favorite records of the year. Is the new Gaytheist record? And let's just, without any little bit of ado, but without much further ado, let's get into it. Jason, welcome to the show, man.
Hi, Conan. How you doing?
Great. I was trying to figure it out on my way down. You know, what record is this for you guys?
Full length six.
Yeah, I was gonna say you've been around for a little bit, consistent.
Yeah, 2011.
Yeah, and not like huge breaks between records, but not like Creedence Clearwater Revival popping them out every year either. I mean, it's
right. We did it first. Our first 3 years, we put out four recordings.
Yeah, and then it kind of slowed down.
We slowed way down.
Yeah.
We're from so long ago, we played a show with a band called Victory and Associates.
That's right. That was a terrible show for us. We were not good that night.
Well, that was at the place with the picnic tables in Oakland.
Oh, that's right. That was Mile High Club. I saw Sleep play.
Oh, yeah, Mile High Club.
They blew the power.
Oh, geez.
But not like with their stacks and stacks of amps, with the box fan that Jason plugged in like three quarters of the way through this. It was like so hot. It was like, you know, sweat was like dripping off the walls. He plugged in this box fan and that blew the power, which, and he's like, really? Oh, that? And he like pointed to like stacks. He's like, that was the thing that, okay. Yeah, that's right. Victory and Associates. Boy, I remember that band.
Yeah.
We were not good that night. I don't remember why. I mean, it was fine, I'm sure, but like it was. I remember specifically being bummed out because I was like, "Oh yeah, I really like Gaytheist. Like, I wish we'd play better."
Well, y'all have another chance in June, yeah, right? June 4th. You'll have another chance. Oh no.
Okay, no, you're good. I think that was me.
Okay,
so, sorry. Anyway, no, yeah, you're that many years old.
Yes.
Well, and so reason why I bring it up is every band likes to think that their new record is their best one, right? But I have to say, I think the Mustache Days is your best record. Like it's awesome.
Thank you. I think we put way more effort into it than we put a lot of effort into all of them, but we had more time with it, so I think it just worked out pretty good. And Nick hasn't slowed down, so it wasn't like,
yeah.
I wouldn't even say we've changed that much. I just think that we're dialing it in better. But I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, and it's your band that very much knows their identity. They know that. We should mention too, the reason why we're doing this on a Friday instead of Thursday is you opened for the freaking Jesus Lizard. How was that?
Oh,
that was pretty good.
It was everything that I had like secretly hoped it would be, down from,
of course, yeah,
because when you're opening a show, you don't know if anyone's going to show up for the opening band.
Sure.
They actually let us push it back just enough minutes for the place to fill up. We played great. We had so much fun. Walk off stage, David Yao's waiting there to give us kudos. So I was pretty much just floating around after that. It was great.
Yeah, and that's always, it's always so nice when, so first of all, when a band at their level, and I should mention that former guests of the show, Dwayne and David, both multiple times. Still get to have William Sims or Mac on. Sweethearts, like just absolutely the best people. But when a band at that level takes the time and takes their, I hesitate to use the word fame because it's a microcosm, really, right? But the, sure. but they choose it to platform deserving bands that are doing something interesting, and especially not even just like, hey, here's one band for the whole tour. Like, hey, here's like a bunch of different cool bands that maybe you should know about.
Locals everywhere. That it, just like it would have been 30 years ago when they used to just tour all the time.
Yeah.
Have some locals open, you know, and it's great. It was awesome.
I love that. I think that's so cool. And I think that's such a, I guess I don't understand why more bands don't do that. I mean, there's certainly ones that consistently do it, but I think it's something where the audience clearly, you know, is going to be interesting. It makes it interesting for the audience as well, especially for a band like the Jesus Lizard that gets like, I almost said repeat offenders, but you know what I mean? Repeat attendees. And, you know, that's fantastic. And that, again, it provides great opportunities for bands like yours where it's like you have like-minded people that maybe they know you, maybe they don't, right? I mean, maybe they live in Vancouver and they never go to shows, you know, who knows? It's an opportunity to reinforce for the people that already are your people, but then also play to people that maybe don't get out as much, or maybe they don't check out new music that much.
And exactly, that's
amazing. And like, I always love it when bands do that. And I love when bands like yours get the opportunity to play shows like that. So very good reason for doing the show on a different night.
Yeah, I appreciate you accommodating me.
So, all right. So back to one of the best titled records of the year too, The Mustache Days, which I love dearly. What was that? Did that title come early in the process? Or
so for about a year, the title was going to be The Lady Will Have a Salad. And and it was, we had a whole thing too where it was, the cover was going to be us sitting with salad on our heads and the back being a very angry looking lady at us. And then just as time went on, I was like, that doesn't really have anything to do with this record. I mean, maybe not the mustache days either. But eventually Nick had a memory of an old episode of C-Lab 2021 where at the very end, there's a little gag and then he's like, mustache on, mustache off, mustache days. And then just that stuck with us. There's some of the songs is about, I usually sing about characters. One of the characters is transitioning throughout a couple of the songs. Mm-hmm. And so the mustache days just, I was like, actually, I think this
that works.
Is, yeah. So, we were pretty stoked on that name and everyone that we kind of were like, hey, I think we're going to call it this was kind of perked up and agreed with us that it was pretty good. So,
well, and it's funny because naturally your aesthetic is like one of the first things I thought of. It's like, oh, that's funny. Cause it also works with, you know, the fact that like, you know, one of the fellas in the band has a notable mustache. I would call it like amongst other notable things, which is a game recognized game moment, you know, there's nothing wrong, especially in, I feel like whatever you call it, loud, crazy, aggressive music, et cetera, et cetera. There tends to be very much a uniform of yes. dress and yeah. look, which is like, all right, we get it. I like you see the band roll up. You're like, I know what this is going to sound like.
Yeah.
And you know, peace and love, that's fine, but you know, you've always been a guy that, you know, you have your own aesthetic, your own look that's very unique, and you know, sometimes I would imagine people don't always respond to that, or maybe respond in like a very puzzled or different way. And
yeah, it happens, definitely. Depends on the show, depends on whether we're headlining and playing to our audience, then it's already accepted. You know, we'll do these shows like last night where, I'll come hang out by the merch for a little bit. If depending on the show, I might be doing the merch, but, and then I usually get a couple comments that'll, I thought it was going to sound like, you know, just whatever, that's not balls to the wall, heavy noise rock. So,
right. Well, and cause you guys always, cause there is a real, There's an aggression to the music, but it has like such huge pop hooks too, in like, you know, in that very, in the way that I attribute to bands like the Wipers and stuff like that, where it's sort of like unorthodox, but like, oh, that's very, you know, that's interesting that that's happening there, and especially in the world of noise rock and heavy music, like songcraft isn't necessarily like the first watchword.
Sure.
And I'm attempting to choose my words carefully here because I don't want to sound reductive, but I think it's something where a lot of times bands will be like, they have a good sound. They sure. sound good, which you guys do have a good sound, but also like the songs are there. And that's something that I personally appreciate and look for, you know, more and more these days. But yeah. You've got a unique aesthetic too. And being unique isn't always great. Like, you know, being unique is wonderful, but when you're playing to people that don't know who you are or what you do, you can get some confused and insensitive reactions sometimes just for literally how you look,
yeah.
which is something that non-white people have to deal with all the time, I should mention. But, you know, I think it's great. I think it's like people need to challenge their preconceptions of what, you know, this kind of music, well, what should he look like?
And,
you know,
bands like Jesus Lizard and other bands that we get to play with, they have open-minded audiences. So
of course,
it works to our benefit. Plus, having Nick on drums is always just going to be one.
Oh, yeah. Who's A, fantastic, and B, like, he does kind of fit the model, you know. he's got some freaking, I mean, some Hall of Fame badassery going on this record. Not that he's ever a slouch or anything, but he's going nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Real busy on them drums.
we spent one extra day in the studio this time, and that was like a world of difference too, as far as just taking that much more time to to redo things that were like, we probably would have kept some things before that were like, it didn't quite go the way it was hoping. Right. But whereas this time, I really do feel like we were able to achieve everything to it. Yeah,
because you're, well, exactly. And that's something that for some reason, it's almost like stigmatized. Right. It amongst like, you know, quote unquote punk rock or whatever. But what are you, Steely Dan? Okay, come on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, back. Or I feel like that used to be anyway. Maybe people don't care now. But I think that it's, yeah, I mean, just like making sure you have something you're happy with. Great.
Yes.
I mean, that's like, wow. You think that would be like something you could do with every record instead of like, well, that's just how it came out. I guess that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually for us a matter of time and cost. And then also I tend to be okay with things, even though later on, even though maybe there's something in the back of my head going, actually, you should probably work on this more. And then I'm like, no, this is great. This is great. Yeah. And then a year later, listening back and going, damn it.
Probably should have worked on that a little more, right?
But our last several albums, I'll listen to them again years later and be like, oh no, I'm happy with the way this all turned out. So
right, well, yeah, and that's something where it's the record, you know, like whether it was the original intention or not, that's what it is, and that's there is a certain Zen attitude towards you know, the acceptance of that and mm-hmm. appreciating that, because it can be something where it turns out a way that's different than maybe you thought it was going to be, and that's
yes,
you know, that's okay. Why don't we, so I want to go through the new record in depth, but before we do that, let's just start from the very beginning, right?
Sure.
The very first one was Stealth Beats, right? So that member is Good to Die.
That is the first one we put out on vinyl. We have one album we put out on our own before that.
Okay, so which one was that one? Maybe I don't.
It's called Pentagrams Are Super.
Oh no, I do have the CDR. I do have that.
Yeah.
So, where? I don't know, but I have it somewhere.
Well, maybe we had him with us when we were in Oakland that time.
That might be it. Yeah. But I probably have digital. I probably have a rip of it. So so Pentagrams Are Super is where it all starts. So tell me how that one comes together.
So that starts out as just Nick and I practicing as a duo over the summer of 2010 in Tim's basement. Mm-hmm. Turns out, a lot of times Tim would be doing laundry when we were jamming, and he'd come downstairs and grab his laundry. So Nick and I get together, and after four or five sessions, we almost have that entire album. We were going to call ourselves Hemperer with an H. And every time we would try and tell somebody our name, Hemperer, they would go, Emperor? There's already a band called Emperor. And I was like, no, Hemperer. And I was like, I can't even say it. What? Fuck this. So
I call that the drunk in a bar test, which is that if you're in a loud bar and you try to tell someone your band name and they get it wrong, then it's not a good band name.
Yeah.
Which means they don't have a good band name, but whatever. That's fine.
Conan, Neutron, and the what?
And I already stopped paying attention. There's too many words.
But so suddenly at that point, Nick was actually going to move away. He was like, well, I'm going to move to Denver. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. shit. I was like, I guess we're not going to continue jamming. He goes, no, we'll figure it out. And I was like, So Tim's literally walking downstairs to do laundry, and I'm like, hey, do you want to grab your bass and jam with us? And he goes, okay. So he grabs the bass, starts playing the songs from beginning to end on it.
And we're like, because he's heard them.
What? And he's like, yeah, I actually, I'll sit upstairs and listen, and I like it. And I was like, oh, damn. And I've known Tim since high school, and
we've
played music together off and on. It had been a long time. But, well, actually, I take it back. It hadn't been a long time because we had the three of us had a little project for Gatheus. So anyways, next thing I know, January 2011, we played a party, and then we went and recorded Pentagrams with our friend Jared, who our first couple of recordings were with him in a basement studio he was running.
Right.
And then when we did Stealth Beats, that's the first time we started recording with Stefan Hawks. And then that all led to getting it put out on record with Good to Die.
Yeah, which is that's all that came together. Okay, good. So that's funny. They just like absorbed the music enough to be able to like play along. That's great. Just from
And he's stupid talented guitar player, and it's funny, bass just applies all of his same crazy skills to that too.
So how did you know Nick Christopherson?
The second recording we did was an EP called Rainbows Have Nothing to Hide, and I decided to send copies out to some people, mm-hmm. and one of them I sent was to Nick Christopherson. So then at the end of the year, Nick used to run this site called Seattle Rock Guide. It was like him and several other writers.
That's it.
And so they, Nick and one other writer picked our EP as one of the top 10 releases of 2011. And so I noted that when Stealth Beats was done recording, I sent a copy of it to Monogamy Party, who was a badass Seattle band that was them and Sandrider were kind of leading the Good to Die Records.
Yeah.
So I'd sent them a recording of Stealth Beats and was like, hey, do you think this is something Nick would be interested in? So then they actually went to him and were like, dude, you need to put this out. And then Nick came down to Portland and saw us and Rabbits and then signed both of us that night. And then pretty quick in a row, Stealth Beats came out and then Rabbits Bites Rights. And so that's how suddenly we were hooked up with him. And Nick and his crew just worked super hard to just get us on killer shows. And it was great. We'd never put anything out on vinyl. So that's
exciting. Yeah.
That was the starting of that. Now we have a bunch of records, and every time I'm still just excited for them. So.
And that's always kind of like, it's interesting. I know I'm saying this to you because I know you can appreciate it. When you have a big discography, you have like sort of each one is like, oh yeah, that one. And like you have like little memories of like when it came out and like whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you get a little like your own personal Library of Congress or whatever. Or whatever, yeah. But, you know, the Library of Memories.
my records have my record collection has the G section for us. So it's very exciting.
Right, exactly. very prodigious. Yes, absolutely. Right. So there's Stealth Beats comes out. That's like 2012, right? It's Mike Longlow's.
Yes.
Ones. Okay.
Yeah.
And that kind of just by nature of, you know, Nick, you know, being attached to the record and the guy kept bringing you to different audiences and stuff like that, and having like a little bit of a bigger platform starts to get you out in the world a little bit. Tell me about from Stealth Beats to Hold Me But Not So Tight. Like what happens in between there?
So up to that point, so we've been around for about a year and a half. For whatever reason, we go up to Seattle and play, and the shows are great, and the right. local papers are like, you know, writing previews. Oh, you know, go see. And so it was just like, oh damn, Portland. I'd be like, oh hey, so how come our show's not even on the calendar? And then once Stealth Beats came out, all of a sudden, just one by one, all the Portland stuff just started happening. Yeah. By the time Hold Me had come out, the weeklies in Portland had started involving us in their stuff. Like, oh, we're having this event where we brew beers based on each band, and you're going to be part of that, this giant ballroom. It was
nice,
great.
Nice.
And then things like that started happening. And so, and then Willamette Week does a top 10 band thing, and we ended up on it the year after, in 2013, after Stealth Beats had been out. So, and then that just weirdly opened up doors just for some cooler shows. And then we actually finally, right before Hold Me came out, we finally did our first tour. And I believe it was either that tour or the one after that where we ended up playing.
Where we played with you guys.
I
can't remember because it was Eli's Mile High Club. Then it was just Mile High Club. And then it came back to Eli's Mile High Club. And
it was Eli's when we played.
Okay. And I don't know why those changes were made and nobody cares or knows. So, but they were very, no, it's just Mile High Club now. I'm like, okay, sure. You know, like right on. And then it was like, oh, it's back to Eli's Mile High Club. Like, and then again, I was like, all right, cool. Right on. That was a very long involved story that involves seeing Reptoid for the first time and drinking a very strong beer without realizing that the reason I didn't realize it is that Jordan just, he was like, hey man, you know, my new band's playing. I'm like, oh great, I'll come see you. Yeah, sounds great. And they had just like a beer I like very much that is very strong. And I was like, well, I'm not driving. I'm just hanging out watching my friend's band. I'm going to keep drinking this. And I didn't realize it was just him. So I see Reptoid and I was like, oh, it's like, I see him like got like, he has his whole setup and I'm like, oh, it's literally just him. And then he just, and it's like End of Days happening on stage. I'm like, oh my God, like Maxell guy, hair blowing back, you know, the whole thing. And that was my first Reptoid experience, which was just like,
oh, nice.
Holy moly. Because at no point ever did he mention, oh yeah, and the new band is just me. Because he had been in like trios, he'd been in duos, and it was like, oh yeah, he's a great drummer, you know, awesome. Whatever it is, this is going to be cool. And
Were you based out of Oakland back then?
Oh yeah, yeah. I lived in Oakland for 22 years. That's like,
okay.
Yeah, we moved to Milwaukee in 2017. But that was, Oakland is in my heart always. But that was one of my Mile High Club stories. That's the other, I told you the other one, which is Sleep blacking the place out with that box fan, which is hilarious. But anyway, Mile High Club. So that would have been around that time. So 2013, 2012.
Yeah, 2013.
Neighborhood, right? That makes sense. Sure.
Yeah.
And you guys are getting out in the world a little bit there. Not even just in Northwest, but you're getting out in the world a little bit. Is that fair to say? You're starting to tour a little more?
Yes. We traveled a little bit before Hold Me came out. Then Hold Me came out, and I mentioned that we were picked for the top 10 Willamette Week thing.
Yeah, 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 that's right.
You can look up to see who voted for your band.
Oh my God. That's A, awesome, B, horrifying. But yeah, great.
I have myself become one of the judges ever since then. So every year I'm one of the people that picks them, and then people can look it up and then get mad at me for not picking their band. But one of the people on that was Whitey McConaughey.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so
Red Fang videos. He's great.
So I sent him a copy of Hold Me before it came out, and I was just like, hey. And then he wrote back, I have an idea for a music video for Stomach Pains. And I was like, are you serious? And so like a month later, he sends me a script. And then next thing we know, we filmed a video for Stomach Pains. And then the end of that year, we did a 2-week tour. And then part of it was a leg of opening for Red Fang. That was magical. So, cause it was Red Fang and Helmsley, and those bands are just so amazing. So, and good people. So that was that, we were just like, holy shit. Okay. This is what we were hoping would happen with it. Cause we weren't, we've farted around with bands before, and you know, nothing ever really seems to, kind of go beyond us, you know, become something more. And so it was pretty exciting.
So sometimes a band can be like totally fantastic and they just can't get arrested for whatever reason. Yeah. Like it's just nothing happens. And then sometimes a band can be, you know, just fine. And like, you know, the world opens up for them and it's just,
that's the norm.
You know, it's like, okay, they're okay. Yeah. Sure. I guess that's all right. So it's all the more, it's all the more awesome when it's somebody that actually, you know, when there's some depth behind it and some, some little dirt on it, so to speak, as they say. But that's the one that's the Stomach Pains. That's the one where he has the 7-Eleven trucker meth.
Yes, yeah.
Like what are those?
Yeah, that whole thing was like, what?
With the lights. Yeah.
The headlamps.
Headlamps, thank you. The thing with the lights. Good Lord. Okay, long week, everybody.
Well, you remembered. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a memorable video. I mean, all that guy's videos are great. I'm a huge fan of what he does. So you've got that. Hold Me But Not So Tight comes out. You've done a bunch of shows with Red Fang, did a bunch of shows with Helmsley, kind of opened up some new audiences, opened up some new minds, so to speak. The live record, mm-hmm. is like 2014. Is that right? It's
yes. Along those lines. So that comes from, we get back from the Red Fang tour, and then that's a few weeks before Halloween. And Banana Stand is at the time. That's right. Yeah. So Banana Stand was this amazing collective in Portland where almost every month they would put out a new live album that they would record in their basement party / studio.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
And so they had a Halloween party, and we had this packed basement party where they had the full studio set up, recorded us. Then they take that to Larry Crane, who's just like one of the most legendary producers in Portland, and he does the mix for it. And then at the time, Bim from he's known now as the drummer of Help. This amazing badass.
Oh,
punk
I still have never
Portland.
Seen them. I think I've pestered them for a while to play with us, but I've never seen them play.
They're busy. They're very, very busy.
Yeah, yeah. So. I was gonna say now especially, but I heard about them really early on, and I was like, fuck, this band's really hard to search for.
They're rad. They put on the show. You
know, I would love to see them play.
It's great.
Yeah, I would love.
But anyways, he was involved with those guys, and so 2014 rolls around, and they're like, okay, well, this is what we're gonna do. Red Bull's gonna help pay for these billboards in town to promote the album.
Amazing.
We're gonna have you open for Russian Circles at the Mississippi Studios to promote it, and then also. Like Red Bull bought 500 copies to give out for free and then
Whoa.
made t-shirts for us. It was just all like, oh, okay. And then they gave us a bunch of Red Bull, which Tim drank at the time. So he took all of the cases of Red Bull.
So he's stoked.
The...
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like our,
don't drink them all at once, Tim. Yeah.
I want to say that was probably the beginning and end of anything we did like that had some sort of weird commercial thing going on with it as well.
There
Although
still...
Banana Stand wasn't like part of Red Bull. It just Red Bull at the time was, you know, they were targeting a new market and dumping money in it, and so they were like, "Yeah, this is cool. We'll put our name on the advertising." So.
Well, I feel like there were that was like an era where they were just like brands were like throwing. Just anything in the wall to see what sticks, right? I'm like, hey, why don't we try to do it? Scion, right? That car company.
Oh,
it, stuff.
Yeah. Torch and Red Fang did stuff with them. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just like,
and they'd be like, okay, we got a tour and a new single that they just spent all this money and gave to us. You know, it's like, okay.
Yeah. But if you think about like what a car company's budget would be compared to like an indie record label, you know, it's sort of like, oh, that's just a loss.
Yeah.
Whatever, we can afford to lose money on that. It's great advertising.
Yeah. This is our loss leader.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's like a way that bands as a loss leader becomes an asset, right? I suppose. But I feel like that was like one of the last kind of time periods where like that stuff was before the efficacy of it was found to be wanting. Necessarily, yeah. or just whatever, not to the sensibilities of their clientele or whatever. But
yeah, that makes sense.
That's interesting. I actually didn't know. If I knew that stuff, I'd forgotten it.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I didn't know about any of that.
A lot of this is kind of Portland centric too. So.
Right, sure, and you know, stuff comes out in weird ways, for sure. That's because I was like Banana Stand Media, like Arrested Development. That's all I knew. But
yeah, then that's exactly what it was. The money's in the Banana Stand. So.
Yeah, exactly.
That was where they got it.
Look, I was all in. I mean, like, say less. I'm on board.
They did one of the live albums. They put it, most of the times they would do Portland centric acts, but they also around the time we did it, they did one for Tartuffe, and we had played with Tartuffe in San Francisco once. And so I got all excited and I contacted them and dragged them up to the Northwest to play some shows with us right at the start of 2014.
Yeah.
They were great.
Great band. The bass player for that band played in with Matt Solberg from Money to Masses and Minot. Did you ever listen to that band?
Yeah, Minot.
I love Minot. They're like so good.
Yeah, we played with Minot at least once in San Francisco.
Yeah. Really, just really like great collection of dudes and of like really interesting band. I was sad when they.
And then one of those dudes is in Kelvin Wald City.
Yes.
And then he's also in a newer band, X Everything.
X Everything. Which
we played with them a few years ago here in town.
I have yet to see them, but I'm definitely, I like what they've, I like what they've been cooking up. But yeah, Ben Thorne, yeah, good dude. Good dude, good player. That's wild. That's fun. It's funny how these little interconnected things.
Yeah, yeah.
Come together.
Yeah, if you're paying attention, like I used, since high school, I've always just gone to shows, and so I'm very much interested in all it. Like any time meeting up with these people and just suddenly being like, oh wait, I guess now we know these cool bands that I would listen to if I didn't know them, and then I kind of keep track of them and follow them to their other projects. So I don't know. I feel like people that aren't interested in that whole portion of the music would be pretty disappointed if all they're trying to do is make money off of it, because it's not really there. So,
right. Yeah, exactly.
That's the kind of part of what keeps me interested and still wanting to go out and play shows. So,
well, yeah. And also there's something to be said for sticking around. Right. I mean, it's weird now because I was thinking about it. Well, I was thinking about it because I'm doing a press cycle, but it's like, oh, this is like the 10-year anniversary of Kona Neutron, The Secret Friends, which is great. It just popped right in. But it's like, that means that this is now my most long-lived band. Like, it's because Replicator was around for 8 years. I mean, maybe give or take 9, but like really 8 years. And I've always kind of been a serial monogamist for bands. Like, for someone that's been touring almost his entire adult life, I haven't been in that many bands. Like, it really.
Sure. But that's good. That's not a bad thing that you haven't had 50 bands.
So. Yeah. I mean, because some people do. Some people like playing in a bunch of different projects. Some people like doing a bunch of stuff at the same time. And, you know, I've just kind of been. I kind of tend to like dance with the one that brought you, you know? to a certain degree, but it is interesting what you say about when you said the keeping up with people that you've played with and like whatever their new projects and stuff are. Because I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about how interesting that can be. That like usually you can spot when someone's like, even if there's, you know, whatever, maybe they're in an area that doesn't support, that doesn't have a huge music scene, so it's like harder to keep a band sustainable or whatever, or they don't tour.
Yeah, no opportunities, nowhere to play. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So there's going to be like maybe a shorter lifespan for bands and stuff. But there's always people like, oh, that person's like so rad. They're such a great player. They're such a they're such a shining star and like a sea of like drabness.
Little stars, each and every one of us.
Well, and it's nice to see when like somebody. One of those people like it isn't something that it hits too. I mean, you know, Kowloon Walled City is a great example where it's just like, you know, I was like, oh, Scott's so great. Like, I hope this new band of his takes off.
Yeah.
And it did. Yeah. And which is great because they're genius, but it's like, cool. That and $5 gets you a coffee at Starbucks though. Like it, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, I mean, it absolutely matters, but from the perspective of, you know, being successful as a band, that's like one of many things, one of which is just happenstance and you know, any number of things. But if you stick around, cool things can happen. Anyway, I don't know why I'm going with this.
Well, plus also with that is I like to have a lot of control over the shows we play and who we play with.
Sure.
And so it's nice, you know, I get to know these people and then be like, hey, we're coming back through town, and they're like, oh, well, now I have this. Great, I want to see it. You know, let's play a show together. Or they'll come through the Northwest and be like, hey, can you do shows with us? So that's kind of part of it as well. So.
Well, and that's part of being a community as well, and that's beyond just the mindset of a single, you know, creative act doing stuff that's in their best interest, but being like part of a community of. A fellowship, if you will, of a fellow creatives.
And that's actually part of our 2014. So, you know, that live album's out. Mm-hmm. We're now doing, like, it seemed like we would keep doing these long weekends that whole year. So it'd be like, Tartuffe, next week, next month, Drunk Dad, next month, Kowloon Walled City, next month, Helms of Lee. And it was really fun because we would just, it was really easy to hook up with a band for like 4 shows and just
do stuff. And then you get to like have like a little tour lit or mini tour, you know.
For us, summer of 2014, we play Total Fest in Missoula.
All right.
While we're there, we were given a bunch of chocolate covered mushrooms, and so we were tripping balls one of the nights. It was a night we weren't playing, and suddenly Nick comes back to the van. He's like, "So I'm the drummer of Lord Dying now." We're all, "What?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm in Lord Dying." And then he also was in Bastard Feast at the time.
Right, right.
And so Bastard Feast had a brand new album out from this label in Europe. And so they were like, "Yeah, we're about to hit a 5-week tour." And so suddenly Gaithius kind of just comes to a grinding halt at the end of,
right.
About midway through 2014. And he does like 5 weeks with Bastard Feast. Comes back and then leaves for 7 weeks with Lord Dying and Anvil. They were doing the Anvil tour for it was like 35 dates across Canada and America.
Wow.
And so Nick comes back from that and he was just like, "Okay, I actually don't want to do either of those bands." And we're like, "All right." And so we actually ended 2014 by going into the studio and recording. Right. And then that would lead to stuff that we put out in 2015.
Nice. Yeah. And well, I should mention too, I think if I got the timeline correctly, I actually met Nick before I ever saw Gaytheist through Carlo.
Oh, that would make sense because El Cerdo toured quite a bit, and so did Elitist, which they became Bastard Feast. Oh, and then he toured with Harkonnen once, just as hanging out with him. He would tour with bands too, just as like a crew.
Yeah, I might have actually first met him when a Replicator played with Harkonnen, but that would have been like forever. But it's one of those things where you don't even remember how it actually happened. But you're like, "Oh yeah, hey, what's up?" You know. But I remember being when I heard you guys, I was like, "Oh wow, this is cool. This is like not I expected." I expected something more like those bands, and I was like, "Oh, this is interesting. This is like real scratches a real cool itch that few bands do. Like, you know, in the torch milieu of being both like heavy and hooky at the same time."
Yeah, that's the prototype for me for that was Carp.
I mean that's
because Carp was so brutally heavy, yet somehow so catchy, and yet somehow so funny.
Yeah, right.
That,
yeah.
That's still like kind of the thing that the three of us go back to. Well, if it's kind of like Carp, then we're doing it right.
See, it's so funny too, because I feel like their discography is still, it's almost like a word of mouth thing because it isn't, I think most of it isn't even on the major streamers. They have like a Bandcamp for it, but then I'll run into bands that are like kids that are like, you know, they're 19 or something, and they're like, "Oh, you know, bands are gonna do, I really love Carp, and I'm great, awesome."
We 2016 maybe. So there's a thing in Portland called Portland School of Rock, and
sure.
They around 2014 would almost every year include us in this showcase they do at the beginning of each year. That is called the Best of Portland, and where the kids learn Portland band songs. And so each year, these students would learn a couple Gaithius songs, and then me and Tim would get
awesome.
On stage.
I love that.
We'd get on stage with this kind of whole lineup of kids and play a couple of our songs. And I lost my train of thought. I forgot what I was going to leave. Oh, it was going to lead to Carp. So then around 2016, their music director contacts me. He says, "Hey, each month we're going to assign a band to the students, and that band, you know, which we were going to be for 1 month, assigns an album to the students." And so we assigned them Carp's self-titled album. So these dozen kids learned the entire album, and then they also went and learned Rocky Mountain Rescue and a couple other singles.
Nice.
And then they got up and performed as Carp, and said that, you know, it would be like all these different kids would rotate through it. So that would be an example of kids that are in high school that are learning about Carp.
Yeah, that's great. I mean,
yeah, so
it is interesting that, well, it's interesting to see how bands are perceived too, because I feel like there's this idea that you know, bands like Cardboard bigger than they were, which, I mean, they were, you know, big in my mind, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But, you know, that like Unwound was as big as Smashing Pumpkins and was like, oh, no, definitely not. That was not.
No.
That was not true at all.
But some bands age well. Like Unwound's a band that now is playing bigger shows than they really ever. I mean, they're headlining these shows that they never could have back when they were doing it.
Yeah.
And now they're, people have listened to those albums so much that they're like, holy shit, I missed out. And now they get to see it.
Yeah, that's really great to see. It's pretty... It's a little bittersweet, of course, you know, with just Vern being a friend and all. But it's like if any, I mean, there's no one else that could do it, let alone that is killing it, doing it, than Jared. And he's doing such an amazing job. I'd like to see him again. I'd like to see him play again. I was too I was too wrapped up in my feelings and my drinking the first
time. That is 100% understandable. Yeah, that's...
So I need to give it a fair reading, because I loved it, but it was like I need to see it again. That's what it comes down to. Maybe one of these times I'll pull it off. But yeah, it was amazing. They've done, I mean, it's great to see those songs live again and again for a generation of I almost said children for a generation of people that never got to see them, that didn't never got the opportunity, didn't know it, and like to see like the power that that has of people connecting with it. I mean, that's great. That's the reason for. You talk about the reunion industrial complex and like choking out any space for like current or existing working bands. It's like, that's the good side of it. Where it's like, oh no, people get a chance to see this thing that they never thought they'd see. Which goes back to Jesus Lizard. You know, there's a whole generation of people who say that band.
And then Jesus Lizard is not choking anyone out because they're having local bands open the shows. You know, it's like they're actually doing it right. So
yeah, again, it's. Like to encourage that kind of thing. I'd like to encourage other big bands to do that as well, because I don't know what you're doing, but I think it matters more now than it ever used to. And I think that that's important to do. tell me about Gabitz.
Oh, okay. So, at this point we're pretty close with the Rabbits dudes because they're also working. Rabbits though. Are you familiar with them?
Crap, I played with them somewhere.
Okay.
at some point. Yeah, they're great. I love them.
And so Josh had he's been around for a long time with successful bands before Rabbits.
Yeah.
And then so we just started kind of glommed onto him and started playing shows with him often in Portland and Seattle. So eventually, we were talking about what we were going to do next for Good to Die. And Josh and I just started brainstorming this concept album, which was that the first song and the last song would include. So the first song is ours, but it has him singing the opening. And then the last song, I sing the closing. Then the second song, I can't remember the theme. Then the middle two songs were us covering each other. Then the second to last song was us guest vocaling on each other. And then the last song was the exact same song reinterpreted. So him and I sat down and wrote the song called Soap Scum. And all we did was wrote the lyrics and then we wrote the main verse chorus and was like, let's see what our bands do. And so then we went back, figured it all out, recorded our version of it. They went and recorded their version. And then Nick put it out as this concept split.
Yeah, it's kind of like almost got an Ouroboros sort of thing going on.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Which I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And it was an interesting way to approach doing like a split, right? Like where it's like not, and it goes beyond like a split, it becomes a collaboration. It becomes like a,
And the year before that album came out, Tim had bladder cancer and had to have surgery, and it was successful, but fucking expensive. So we did this benefit concert. Josh from Rabbits like personally arranged to have like $1,000. So like he's our forever guy. He's amazing. And so I was super excited to do this project with him. And we did it. I wish I could remember all their names. I'm blanking, but their drummer, after the album came out, he was like, dude, we got good reviews. We don't get good reviews.
That's a new concept.
But yeah, sure. Unfortunately, we did a couple really cool record release shows, and then Rabbit's Call It Quits. And so,
yeah.
So then when we were going to do a tour with them and didn't. And then instead, we had also put out, right around the same time as Gay Bits, we took two songs from that recording session and put out a split with Baby Girl from Salt Lake City.
Right. That's right. And that's actually the first time I heard of Baby Girl, who I love. I think that band's great. Yeah, that was, I remember being like, oh, there's a good band from Utah, huh? Cool.
Yeah. And so we ended up doing a tour with Baby Girl instead of Rabbits.
Yeah.
And then so that came out. Then we wind down and Nick moves to Florida.
Yeah.
And then people in town were like, oh, you guys broke up. And I was like, no, we're just live across the country. And I was like, you want to pay to fly us somewhere? We'll do it. And then it happened a few times. People would, it was funny getting show offers when Nick was in Florida, because they'd be like, hey, can you play blah, blah, blah. I was like, can you fly our drummer?
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, what? And then actually a couple times, yes, we can. We can fly your drummer.
Yeah. Like, well, great.
Okay.
Yeah. Sounds okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Then while he was gone, we put out the Let's Jam Again Soon album.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So he came back and we hooked up and did a tour to promote it. And then we got flown out to a couple places to do shows. But that was kind of a slow period for us until he moved back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I jumped ahead.
No, that's fine. So. Well, you got to mention the one that has Avenged 7-Minute Abs on it.
So. Yes. that song, Nick hates, we played it last night.
Why does he hate it?
Because the drum, there's this part where his drumming is so fucking stupidly out of hand.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
That he's like, dude, I can't do that. He's just like, I'm not always up for that. But this particular time, when we played last night, he had just got back from 2 weeks in Europe with Great Falls, and his chops are back, and he was like, let's do it. Blah!
He's like, ran around. So. I mean, he's a pretty, full bore kind of drummer.
and he doesn't. If he's not feeling up for something, he'd rather just, he's like, I don't want to do it half-assed. Let's do that.
Right. He doesn't want to do it if it's not going to be the full experience. Right. Sure. No, I get that. He's a purist that way. I understand. So then Gay Theist is more of not a running around doing stuff all the time band, but doing stuff basically. Adventure based when you can pull it off.
That opportunity arises and we get it all played out. And that went on. He moves back here 2018, and then we suddenly start playing a lot.
And that's what leads to, well, a couple things. So you've got let me get over to the year that wasn't. You get that split with Intercourse, right? That Rhino puts out, and then also the How Long Have I Been on Fire record.
And how long we would have probably done the album earlier? We probably would have put it out in 2019, but Nick moved back. We start writing and cramming, and we're getting ready. While Nick was gone, I started performing solo around town under the name Phil Collins, FILLCOLONS.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
And I basically wrote the next album, and I would perform it with loops. And then Tim would come see, and he would watch me and go, I got ideas. And then when Nick moved back, we reinterpreted everything I had wrote to work on the next album. But we get delayed because High on Fire, break up with their drummer, go to Yob and are like, who do we get? And dudes from Yob are like, dude, the best drummer in town is Nick Parks. Because High on Fire is now like, they practice next door to where I'm at now, where I live now. And then nice. they they all live here in town. So so Nick joins High on Fire. He comes to practice when he goes, I joined another band. And we're like, God damn it, dude.
Not again.
And he goes, but it's a big band. We're like, oh, yeah. Ooh. And he goes, High on Fire. We're like, no, get out of here. Yeah. So this is when it was a couple weeks before High on Fire won the Grammy. So they jam with Nick a couple times and they go hook back up with their drummer and go get the Grammy Award and then come back and jam with him. And they do, you know, so we almost grind, we don't come to a complete halt, but we're obviously not able to do as much.
Yeah.
But then by the end of summer, they were like, hey, we're going to go with a different drummer. And then they kind of went through a few drummers until they landed with Cody.
Yeah.
And then we played with High on Fire last month with Cody on drums. And you know how it is? You like, you see bands and then you're like, oh, that's, we could do that. And then High on Fire said, you guys are fucking, we're street vigilantes. You're super powered humans.
You're the Avengers. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're
Daredevil's great. He's a really kick-ass dude, but he's not Thor.
Daredevil. We're Daredevil and they're thunder gods. Yes.
Right, exactly.
So, so that kind of slowed it down. Then 2020, 100%, he's like, only thing he's doing is gay things.
Right.
Let's put out
go.
That album.
Ready.
I booked 36 shows from across the country and across Canada.
Yeah.
And I quit my job in February of 2020. And then, which I fucking hated the job. So,
that's okay.
The bad move was that I didn't get any of that. See, but we do two shows and then the pandemic hit. And, John, drummer of Red Fang, had just started a new band and we played at one show with them. And then I think the pandemic just completely curtailed that.
Yeah.
And so same for us.
Was that Via Vale? Was that right? Is that
Via Vale. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause we were going to try to play with them. actually, I think I asked them to play on our show our tour that was March where we got, again, this, like, you guys got through two shows and then it was like, oh no, this is not happening.
I was like, we might not be able to play for two more weeks. We might not be able to play for a month. And soon it's like, man, we got those September shows we booked. At least we're going to, oh no, that's not happening either. But we did, the only thing we pulled off in 2020 during the pandemic was Ills. Are you familiar with that band?
Yeah. I love Ills. Yeah.
So they decided to do some streaming. And so we did these two, we went out to the coast and they had rented a house. It's called the Devil's Punch Bowl on the Oregon coast. And we did a live stream there and performed songs. And then we did one other one somewhere else. That was the closest, though, we got to playing live during that whole year. Oh, we cut out.
Yeah, I was. That's very real. And that's something where I wasn't even able to do any of that, just by the nature of how the band operates. So I just did this because either that or just stare at the wall and, you know, stare at each other and wait until we die, like Big Black style.
Yeah.
Like, because I was like, all right. So I just really laid into doing the show. And then at the same time, you know, everyone that sort of, I'm not into podcasts. I'm like, I don't care. That's fine. Suddenly everyone had time for podcasts now. Okay. Well,
yeah. I spent that period with me, my roommate, and our two neighbors became Animal Crossing fanatics. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but we would just get up in the morning and just be like, go to your island and do stuff.
Right. And that's so crazy that you have, I mean, two releases coming out in 2020, right? And then, like, you know, you're just primed and ready to go. That's also when the first Catterball was going to be.
We're like, oh, we're going to meet Intercourse and get to play a show with them. This is going to be so rad.
Yeah.
And nope.
And you guys in Kowloon Walled City finally are playing a Catterball, which is kind of, in my mind, righting it wrong. So I think everyone else now has played that was originally going to be in 2020. Yeah, but that's a...
That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of things important to me. But I think that's such a weird time. And it's so crazy that you were ramped up to, like, cool, let's go be a live band. Let's go do it. And then, no.
But, It could have been so much worse. There were I remember Torch just started like a 5-week Europe tour. Yes. They pay for all the merch to get shipped in. They're going to be playing all these huge festivals, and then they're like, "Yeah, we just suddenly had to fly home and boom, abort everything." So in comparison, I was just like, "Well, I don't know, like it sucked," but
yeah, I think they're of all the people I talked to that had the like had to scrub the shows while we were out. They had the craziest and the most heartbreaking, where it's like, oh my God. And they were like in Greece for a while. I can't remember. It was so long ago. I didn't talk to him about it. But like, I was like, that sounds horrible. This sounds like there should be a movie about this. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah. Maybe one day.
Maybe people will wise up. So how'd you hook up with Ryan, with Hex?
Oh, so, okay. So, what was the album with the goat on the cover? Let's Jam Again Soon, which that was called that because Nick had moved the floor sooner or later. Then
I love that title too, by the way.
Oh, thanks. Nick label Nick of Good to Die Records he let us know. He's like, hey, I'm winding the label down. I'm going to do you guys. He did us, Maximum Mad, Old Iron, and Sandrider, and then that was his kind of last hope.
Yeah,
and so we were like, "Hey, we're grateful for everything that you've done for us." So then, Ryan had moved to town. Turned out he'd been coming to a lot of our shows, and I don't even know how he knew. He just suddenly contacted me out of the blue, and was like, "I hear you guys are looking for a new label," and we were like, "Well, yeah." And so he was like, "I'm interested. I'd love to throw my hat in the ring." And we talked to a few other people, and we're like, Nick is a huge fan of this band, The Helm, from Seattle. And the Helm albums were put out by Ryan, when actually Ryan was based out of Syracuse. So that was a big plus for Nick. And he was like, I think we should give him a chance. And so we started talking with him and working everything out. And he actually gave us a little bit better of a deal than Good to Die. And we put that album out. And even though pandemic hit, he was like, I'm still selling copies. And so he was like, I'd like to put another album out. And so he ended last year putting out that comp of his bands doing cover songs.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
So
yeah.
I'm always excited to have any form of, if we have a song on vinyl, I'm like ecstatic. So
it's always great. Yeah.
And then obviously this year we put out the Mustache Days.
Right, right. And so that's, you know, it's funny too. It's sort of like that's like, band people of a certain age is like, oh, vinyl. Yeah, you know, that's the thing. Like it's real if it's on vinyl. You right. know, it's like yeah. Otherwise CDR, digital, whatever, computer stuff, that whatever. Who cares? That's fine, I guess. No problem. But like, yeah, it is somehow real when it's on vinyl, right?
Yeah, it's weird. It just feels like it's a more concrete representation. And it's not easy to do vinyl. I mean, anything's easy, I guess, if you have a bunch of money, but it's not easy to have to do something and have other people approach you and want to like, I want to release this and
put this out on an archival medium that costs a whole lot of money. That's a niche item that.
Yeah. But it's a labor of love for him. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, he's been really fun to work with.
So 2020, and then now 2025, there's like a whole, you know, civilizations have rose and fell.
Like ours.
Since then. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. And you guys are, you're here with, again, canonically, Kona Neutron's favorite gay theist record. With the Mustache Days, do you want to do the thing where we just go through and we can talk about each one of the songs one by one? You can tell me a little bit about that, like about like.
Sure, I'll do my best.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like, you know, a comprehensive read or anything. Just like you know, something about the song title, where, you know, the lyrics, like whatever floats your boat. You know, it's
okay.
All good. There's no wrong answers. I'll throw it up on the screen so you know what's coming too. Sure. So. Mustache Days is the name of the record. Shelved is the first song. Let's go. There is it. Okay. There it is. Let's a little slow on the uptake. A little slow on the upload and the download here. Okay, so Shelved is the first one.
Hey, it's our Bandcamp.
There it is. Yay. Yeah. It's a visual reminder for people to buy the record.
Excellent. Yeah, this is interesting too, because so Hex has a Bandcamp for it, and that's actually where most people, that's most where you buy the album and all that stuff.
I'm not trying to narc out like that there's fewer people on the Gatebase page. It's fine.
Yeah, but
we can do
and so, but it is nice when somebody will actually like go look up our little page directly.
I'll put it on the Hex page. I don't know if you prefer. There's more bundles on there. Anyway, tell me about Shelved. Yeah, I want to hear about Bandcamp pages.
Oh, sure. So Shelved is where I feel like this entire album is. My singing is more confident, stronger, more melodic. I feel like I have more ideas and I have more control over what I want to do. And Shelved is like a kind of a showcase of that to me. And it also sets the depressing tone of the album, which is, it's just about how we set our entire lives aside for work because we have to. And so it's about shelving plans.
That's so real.
Another uplifting.
But it's like, you know, I mean, look, it's the world we live in, right? We must like it. We don't change it. That's heavy.
So this happens every single time we record an album. The very, very last song that we work on, this is the opening of the album because we're so excited about it.
Because you're excited about it, right?
And once again, I had like an entire different vision of what the album's order and everything on it. And then we write Shelved and go in and record it. And we're all like, yeah, that's obviously the opener.
Well, it's a good opener.
The last album, everything in there was something I had written while Nick had moved away. But then The Dark Deep, we wrote right before we went in the studio, and then that's the opening song, and that's the video and all that stuff. So
yeah
it just, that happens every time.
Sometimes so it goes in that way. Obvious single to me, Break Me In.
So that one, that's Nick sings leads on the verses on that one. Nick has been having a lot more fun with singing and just working on it.
Yeah.
He's got a good deep gravelly voice.
He's
getting more. He has more control over his singing now. And so I had wrote this, and I was like, "Hey, do you want to try and sing these parts?" And it turned out great. So and it's probably the only song on the album that's it's thematically with the album. It's supposed to be the "You can't fucking stop me. Look at me." Before every other song is about, "Oh no, you've been stopped." That's kind of the theme, is just this ridiculous bravado of nothing can stop us.
But you kind of need that to do anything these days, right? I mean, it's just the act of doing something that isn't just doom scrolling is
right.
You know, it requires a lot of effort and a little bit of braggadocio, I think, in my opinion. So that's a good one. I like it. Omnipotent, number three.
So Omnipotent is it's like the most savage little track on the album. It is and almost every album, I have at least one angry anti-religious screed, and that's what this one is.
You're doing the Lord's work, yeah. Jason. See what I did there? Yeah. Yeah, it fits that niche very nicely. That's another banger too. That's
we occasionally back up our name Gaytheist with the song. That's
it's like, oh yeah, maybe we should do that. Yeah. Tell me about Final Form.
So Final Form is one of a few songs. Originally, I had like 5 years to write this album. It went through some changes, and at one point, it was a concept album. That was about a hydra a hydra is like basically a snake with a bunch of heads.
Yeah.
And so it would have been, what do you call it when animals talk? Is that anamorphic? Oh, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. What is
so this is basically
anthropomorphic.
Yeah. So this is basically a hydra that talks and is intelligent. And so originally it was the entire album would have been about this character and his various journeys. And Final Form is where the hydra is trying to transition into a human with arms and legs. And so Final Form is he's gone through all of his surgeries and is now in his final form. And he's accepted that he's, because throughout this story, there's a few other songs that are part of this story on the album, but this would have been the end of the story where he's just accepted all the kind of things he's done to himself.
Right.
Yeah, and that's it.
Interesting. That'd be an interesting concept record, but that's a lot to load into a record.
There's a couple things that we started working on and they weren't working. And then I started backing away from them. I don't need to do this, but there ended up being some really good songs out of it. And so I kept them, even though like lyrically, they might not make as much sense because they're part of like a story, but, I think it still works.
Right. How about Zoo Break?
So Zoo Break is, so after I dropped the concept album, I started writing songs about other characters. And I had this idea that they were also the Hydra, as well as these other characters, were all trapped in a zoo. And at the beginning of this story, a bomb goes off in the zoo and all the animals are, they're all talking animals. So they're all part of this whole thing. And so it's just about a bird and a bear that are talking to each other through their prison escape.
Getting that Animal Crossing in there.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize how much that influenced the
Casey's. It's fine.
It's our most Nintendo-based album.
Lift With Back.
So that name's just terrible advice. Right. That's just a personal song about some problems I've had with my family just things that haven't, my mom's dying and some terrible things have been revealed over the last 6 years to me. And so that's kind of a song, just like, it's a quick one too. I just kind of like blurt out a couple of things that are going on with me and then that's that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a little heavy, you know, there's nothing wrong with getting personal. I mean,
and just apply it to a catchy little short punk song. So.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep it, as long as you keep it succinct, everyone will be like, all right, you know what? It didn't overstay. Let's see. Pyrohydra. Can I safely assume that's part of the,
that would have been the anchor of the entire concept album is Pyrohydra. Right.
Yeah.
Song just slowly became about the idea is that it's an eight-headed hydra basically they're all brothers. The one head hates all the other brothers and he in Dungeons and Dragons a pyrohydra can breathe fire,
right?
Greek mythology, the only way to kill a hydra is to cut off its head and then burn the stump. That's how Hercules kills the hydra.
As a big fan of the Ray Harryhausen pantheon. Yeah,
you're like, I know this.
I'm like, yeah, I know, but explain for the audience.
So in this story, the pyrohydra bites off the other heads, mm-hmm. and then instead of them growing back as two more, he burns them all.
Right.
And so now he's one-headed, and that's the that's kind of like, you know, that song is about it all coming to this head where now at the end he's alone, which is how he, but the final lyrics are he realizes that these people, these brothers he's killed, he still hears their voices in his head. It's their brains are still there, so he did not succeed in getting rid of them.
Right, they're physically arguably it might even be worse because now you can't actually see them, you know.
And this story drives him insane, but you know, it's good uplifting positive.
Yeah, yeah, another uplifting anthem. Yeah, sure, absolutely. Yeah. Silverfuck.
So that's an original song that I wrote. So Silverfuck is by far my favorite Smashing Pumpkins song. Mm-hmm. And Tim and I used to go see them when they would come through town when they were doing Gish, their first album. They would
sure.
they would come through and be opening like, oh, Tad's playing. And then the opening act is Smashing Pumpkins. Primus is playing at the club. The opening act is Smashing Pumpkins. And we were like, man, they come through and they play that Gish album and it's so good. And then they end with this song that like just stuck with me forever. It was, and then later their big album came out, Siamese Dream, and the song's on there, but it's a little like, it's not quite, it's awesome, but it's not quite what we remembered seeing. So a couple years ago, I had a wild hair at my ass and I started looking up Smashing Pumpkins 1991 when they were touring, and sure enough, people had uploaded videos and they're playing that version of Silverfuck that's just mm-hmm. amazing. And I send it to Nick and he's like, oh God, this song's fucking killer. He goes, I could probably play it too. You're like, really? And I was like, well, I'm the weak link of the band as far as musical skill and talent. And I was like, I am not going to be able to pull off Billy Corgan shit.
Yeah.
So, but then as we worked on it, I was approaching it from the idea that what if Smashing Pumpkins showed up to play the show and Billy Corgan didn't make it? And so three of them have to play the song without Billy Corgan.
Sure.
So yeah. The bass player, Darcy's got to step it up with that bass. Yeah. And sure. And then James I is stuck with vocals and having to do all the guitar parts by himself. And then, of course, Jimmy Chamberlain's still there. So Jimmy Chamberlain. So we started playing it at shows and then the reaction was just great. And we really had fun with it. We're like, let's record it. We'll do something with it. We'll put it on a B-side or a, mm-hmm. like a comp or something. But then we recorded it and we were like, oh, we were really happy with it. And
it's a really, it's a really good cover. And I say that they're not my favorite in general as a band.
Yeah. He's kind of a creep. So,
but no, it's a really, and it was, but it's one of the things where like, I listened to it like a few times and it was like, wait, this sounds familiar. Like, and then I had to like think about it. I'm like, oh, like it didn't hit me because it just sounded like, you know, it was very much you guys' sound.
That was what we're trying to achieve too. It's us doing it. And that song is a good representation of, I've taken a lot of influence from the way that song is structured, the way it's got the sweeping little chorusy parts, and so it just kind of it worked out really nicely, and then we were so happy with it, we were like, we should put it on the album, and in my opinion, it worked out pretty good.
Yeah, and it's also your sixth record. You know, you don't have to prove anything to anyone at this point, right? You know, you're doing your thing.
We rarely do cover songs in any form because, you know, it just doesn't, especially as far as recordings go. But yeah, this time it just felt like we had maybe given it enough of our own. It felt like we had taken ownership of this version of the song, and I felt okay with putting it on the album.
Yeah, that's a nice thing, right? Very nice. Modern Surgery.
So Modern Surgery is the, it started out as just a part of that Pyrohydro concept, mm-hmm. where this was originally about the transition that he was going through to try and turn himself into a biped, a person with two arms and two legs.
Hydra to human transition.
Yes. And then I started writing it more just in general, people trying to do things to change their bodies. And then it's kind of a hybrid between telling part of the story and also having a bit more of a general meaning to it.
Nice.
And it's catchy and long and fun.
Yeah.
So we, live very early on when we wrote Modern Surgery and figured out Silverfuck about the same time. And live, we play those back to back, just like
that. Oh, album. Cool. All right.
It's this little like 12-minute chunk of our set when we decide to do it. And so when we recorded it like that, that's where this kind of, yeah, you know, let's keep them together. I know at least two people over the last couple of years have asked me if it was a helmet cover, the Modern Surgery. So I was like, oh, wow. I mean, that it's such right. a simple riff too. I was like, yeah. Oh, I would not be surprised if I go through Helmet's discography and find the dun, 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 dun,
yeah.
dun, dun, dun. Oh,
yeah,
weird.
I didn't come up lift.
With
that. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, well, that's always I get so terror stricken by that sometimes. Of like, this, I stole this from somewhere, didn't I?
We right when this album came out, somebody online accused us of stealing the Mustache Days from Clutch, and at first I was confused. I was like, oh shit, do we have songs that sound like Clutch songs? Nick's a big fan of Clutch, so he knows them better than I do. But and then it just turned out that Clutch has some song where there's one line where he says. Like it's like despite what you say, the mustache stays. And okay. I was like, okay. I was like, we took it from a C-Lab 2021 yeah, right, episode, yeah. if that means anything. And then that was the end of it with the accusations. So
I saw Clutch once in the 90s doing support for Marilyn Manson when Marilyn Manson still looked like a human. That's how long ago that was. Mm-hmm. He just looked like a degenerate, not like an alien.
Right.
And I didn't really know them, but it's funny because like I know they've taken Big Business out with them. It seems like they took
Red Fang out with them too.
Red Fang, yeah, it seems like they got good to handle on things. I'd like to see.
Yeah, they seem like good dudes. So
yeah, and it's I haven't like listened to them tons and tons, but like every time I've heard them, I'm like, hey, what's this? And like, oh, it's Clutch. I'm like, oh, this is good. And then I'm like, I should listen to that. And then I don't. But. Anyway, cool story.
Yeah, there's a lot of bands. there's a lot of
bands out there, my friend. A lot of bands, yeah. Minuscule is the next record. It's the next song.
Minuscule is kind of like a prelude to Brave the Swarm. Minuscule is just generally about cretins online group thinking the stupidest shit there is possible. So there's a line in there about world's most minuscule hive mind. It's just about idiots. Because that leads Brave the Swarm is very much about Martin Scorelli. Minuscule and Brave the Swarm tell these stories that eventually get to where at the end of Brave the Swarm it's only about Martin Scorelli, and it's teasing about when he got caught with his phone in jail and they took it away from him. And it's a petty mean little song about a petty mean little man. So.
Fantastic.
And then Brave the Swarm used to have a country western part in the middle. This is back when all these concept things were happening.
Yeah,
Nick was like, I want to do this shuffle. And then that eventually turned into now that instead there's like kind of an Italian, it almost sounds like, the parts in Italian songs are the mandolins. If anyone listens to this that knows anything about music, they're probably like, fuck this idiot. But yeah, it's like, so it's like that.
Whatever. It's not a music theory podcast, people. So.
I guess I kind of jumped ahead by talking about.
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's totally okay. So that's, there you go. So, that's Brave the Storm. Let's throw the record cover up on the screen for the video, and then audio listeners will have no idea what I'm talking about. What is this record cover? What is this?
So that is a tree in the yard of the house that I rent, and I looked out the window and it was covered in crows, and I took a picture, and it was a bleak sky. I took the photo and I was like. This is our next album cover. And I showed it to the guys and I'm like, that's great.
That's awesome. We like
it. So then it turns out my camera had gotten set to the lowest possible pixel deal.
Oh,
and
no.
So when I start submitting artwork to Hex.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, so this is going to be the photo. And then he writes back, he's like, dude, that's like a thumbnail. And I was like, oh, no, let me find the original file. Yeah. Here's the original file. It looks like a thumbnail. And and then it was like, shit. And I was like, well, this was kind of like, honestly, that tree has in real life fallen. Most of that has just fallen down.
Right.
It's a dead tree. And so I'm like, there's no retaking this photo. But I used to do graphic design like 15 years ago, and I know some tricks.
Okay.
And so
sure, yeah.
I took the photo and I fucked with it real hard. And then we ended up hiring, it's funny to say hiring, Damien from Nick's band Great Falls. He does album layouts and design work. He's really good. So we hired him. And then Ryan also, Hex Ryan loves, he does a lot of like typesetting and print press. And so I sent him the idea of how Gaytheus, the mustache days, where the mustache days is also the middle of Gaytheus. And so then he
designed
that.
Took me like 5 or 6 views for it. I was like, oh, wait, like I didn't catch that for a long time. So there you go.
Oh, nice.
Take of that.
Well, he designed the letters for it. And then Damien took that, this rainbow that I made, and all of it, and then put it together. And then he also took all of the other art and stuff that I sent him and put our entire album layout together.
Nice. Well, it's a good one. It's a good one. So
thank you.
What else? Anything else about the record before we start wrapping things up here?
Normally we tend to be a record everything and put everything on the album. And this was the first time that we recorded 16 songs in this session, and that album's only 11, because I decided to be, I didn't want the album to have one little bit of imperfection. And I wanted I don't think that since Stealth Beats, we've had something that was a really tight, cohesive, single statement.
And interesting. Okay.
That's what I feel like this is a more more well-rounded version of that.
It does seem like a mission statement record, big time.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah. And then the songs that aren't on there did not fit in with this the general theme of it.
Mostly Hydra related.
No, none of these were Hydra related. We were like, we can't have non-Hydra related songs at itself.
Come on, what are we even doing?
We're a Hydra, really, we're a Hydra-driven band.
Go Hydra or go home. That's what that's what I always say. Yes.
That's why I hate those Captain America movies. Like, they make Hydra look like bad.
Hydra's a bad name. Exactly. So what do you got? What do you got going on as a band? Obviously, we all know you're playing the rock and roll party of the year, which is Caterwaul, of course. So
yes.
What else you got?
Yeah. So because of that, we decided to do a little tour. So we're gonna make our way out to Chicago, and then on the way back, we hit Caterwaul. Then a few days later, some fucking band comes through Portland.
So many bands. Who can keep track of them? Really,
it's like some dude with his friends. And
it's a long game. We're playing, it's too long.
I like that we're playing at Club Deluxe. No, I mean, we're playing at Kitten Club, but it says Club Deluxe.
So confusing, I know.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a band called All Ages on there, too. I'm like, no, it's a 21 and over show, but All Ages is playing. Okay, great.
That's like free beer, where you're like,
free beer.
You're just asking you to get punched at the show.
Yeah. That's niche marketing at its greatest / worst.
Yeah.
Do that what you will. No, that's great. And you're going out, you're doing a bunch of shows with the Elephant Rifle on that tour.
Yes, which is, that's awesome, because we hooked up with them 2013, 2014. We play with them all the time. Yeah. Did a couple little like four or five show stretches. And then they were kind of not dormant for a bit. Popped up again, I'd say around like 2018, 2019. Came to Portland, played the show with Drunk Dead, which was another. We almost did a split with Drunk Dead at one point. They were so good. But they broke up. But it was this amazing show. Elephant Rifle were on fire. And then they kind of disappeared again. Yeah. And then I didn't even know when all this was coming together. And you were like, hey, do you know Elephant Rifle? We were like, yeah, we actually, those guys rule. And then like literally as you were like, do you know Elephant Rifle? Blink, I get a message that's a dude from Elephant Rifle. Dude, we got to do shows. And I was like, yeah, we do. So so this all
kind of worked out well because it's like not that many bands that come in from the West Coast. So it's like they're just like, hey, this makes sense to do a thing. It's like that totally makes sense. You know, that's great.
And then on the way home from Caterwaul, we'll hook up with Itchy Kitty from Spokane. They're a magical band. We started playing with them a couple years ago. And every time we kind of hit that area of the country, we try and do shows with them.
Nice.
Boise has got a band. There's a band in Boise now called Trauma Kit. They're so Trauma fucking good.
Okay.
We last two times we played in town, we asked to play with them, and they're playing with us again for this one. And that's at a arcade where you pay and you get all you can play. It's part of the show is
nice.
All ages, arcade, all the games you can play, bar, stage with screens all around it. It's hilarious. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a win-win situation.
I think so. So, and then we'll probably lay low for a bit and then pop back up in the fall.
So, nice. Very cool. Yeah. Well, I love the record, man. Like I said, it's
thank you.
It's definitely, I hear a lot of records, so many records.
I bet.
And you know, and I'm happy to listen to them, but this is one that I've come back to over and over again. And I appreciate that. And I think it's your best one. And that's it's rare.
I think it is too.
You know, it's like I think a lot of bands, you know, it's like, oh, the first record's the best one, and then they all get gradually worse after that. That's what tends to be like the frame. I don't feel that's always the case. Like, I think it depends on the band. And I think you guys come at it from a very intelligent way. It's very thoughtful. And you know what you do, but you always push it a little bit as well. And, you know, there's something to be said for
that. Yeah, I don't think any of our albums break new ground as far as like, oh, whoa, they are so different. It's like, no,
it's electronic track.
But I'm trying to crest more of the same. It is more of the same, but it's not more of the, you know, like just that kind of, there's just enough going on here where these are worthy enough new ideas to stand on their own and not just feel like, oh, so you did that song again.
Well, it's interesting you mentioning that you had worked on vocals too, because I definitely think it's your strongest vocal record.
Which doesn't say the other ones are bad.
It's just like, oh wow, like he's in great form.
The other ones I'll hear back and I'll go, oh, I held back there. Oh, I held back there because I couldn't do what I wanted to do. Whereas this album, I feel like I was able to emote and present things the way that I wanted to, and that's probably why I'm happiest with this one. As a band, I don't think since Stealth Beats, we haven't had something that felt... So when we put out Stealth Beats, we would go out and play shows and just play Stealth Beats from front to back, all songs in order. And we just... Because that album's like 24 minutes.
Yeah, right.
And this album we did like 6 or 7 shows in a row at the beginning of this year where that's what we did. We just played the beginning of the album to the end. And it felt great and it just feels like it's all one. It can be one statement, or we can split up and play individuals.
Perfect. Well, I'm eager to see you do it no matter which ones you play. And it's great talking to you.
Glad I was able
to pull this off. Glad I was able to pull it off before we leave. It was kind of touch and go there for a minute.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. Oh, I got to meet Dwayne really quickly last night. And I mentioned I was going to do your podcast. He was like, oh, you're going to like it. That's a good dude. So,
oh, awesome.
Yeah. So
what a good dude. What a great guitar player. What a good
total
dude.
Total sweethearts, dude.
That's great. That's so great. Yeah, they're again, can't say enough nice things about them Jesus Lizard Boys, right? Yeah, they're so good. Last question. Only canned question I ever ask. You can choose to interpret it however you like. But why do you do what you do?
Because... There is no feeling like playing a show and having people cheer and I'm going to cry because it's just fucking amazing. Nothing else is like it because no one has to, you know, people can boo you, the people can just ignore you, but instead there's just this feeling you cannot achieve in any other way than playing music and having people respond to it in a way that almost makes you feel validated. So it's just like, you know, I would probably take that over an orgasm. But an orgasm is a close second.
Jason, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon.
Look, I got teary-eyed at the end. That means you succeeded.
That's good.
Barbara Walters'd me at the end.
Whatever the podcast equivalent of the Emmys are, we're gonna get our suits picked out.
Oh, so good. Well, you know.
Yeah, you already said. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Technically, I am too. I'm just was bike riding earlier, so you know.
Whatever. Yeah, I was gonna call you up for not having a sparkly coat on, but
you know,
it probably doesn't podcast well.
I do it for the other show. For some reason, I do it for my show. But I mean, you always see it live. But like, I thought about that, and I was like, God, I spend so much time dressing up. It's just sometimes it's exhausting. You know, also, it's not about me when it's this show. It's about the other person. Although it's always about me. Really. Jason, thanks so much, man. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Yeah. See you at Catterwall.
See you in a few weeks. Yeah.
All right.
Later, man.
Take care.
There he goes. Jason Rivera. Awesome dude. Please get the Mustache Stays by Gaytheist. That is, again, a strong contender for my favorite album of the year, really. So take it that what you will. And also take that link and buy a copy of it as well, because that's how these bands make some money, maybe, possibly, just a little bit, though. Anyway, let's listen to Break Me In, and I'll close out the show.
This is America and all the ships at sea. Anyone within the sound of my voice. I've got.
Yeah.
50,000 watts of power.
Gonna do take two of that.
This
I stay muted. Never
do
that.
Turns sound into electricity. Can you hear me now? Out on Route 128, dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? To my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the end of radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Broadcasting if there's no one there to receive. It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day. Radio. Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
this had been a real emergency. Hey, hey.